Hey, thanks so much for checking out the Catalyst Church podcast. You know, our goal is that you would find and follow Jesus. So we hope that these resources and this sermon will help you do just that. If you could do us a favor before we jump in, and first connect with us on social media through any platform, just search Catalyst Woodland. And then also, it is amazing what a simple review on a number of platforms can do to help get the message of Jesus out to our community and to our world. So if you could simply leave us a review on Facebook or Google or any of those other platforms, we would really appreciate it. Well, thanks again for tuning in, and we hope you enjoy this week's message. Hey everyone, Pastor Matt here. Before we jump into this week's message, there is a lot of stuff that I want to let you know about what's going on here within our community. The first is our 5-year anniversary. That is going to be December 1st at 9 and 10:45. So we'd love to have you be a part of that. The second is our Give Love initiative to provide the Christmas wish for foster children in Yolo County. That is all going on right now, and if you need to know more about that, you can go to givelovechristmas.com and find out everything you need there. Then we also have our Christmas Eve services, which are going to be December 22nd at 4, 5:30, and 7, and you can find more information about that at catalystchristmas.org. We are also in our final Sunday of our Just One initiative. Just One is our initiative that we have created through the 30 days of November to help you develop Christ-like rhythms of dependence in this season. So as we get ready for the next 5 years as a church, we want to invite you to be a part of a number of things that we are doing. The first is to set your alarm for 1 o'clock, and when it goes off, simply pray and ask God for 1 minute, God, what would you have me do? And then respond in any way that he asks you to move or give or speak or whatever he asks you to do. We've tried to create a couple different opportunities for you to get that jump started. The first is by joining a team and being a part of the volunteer culture here at Catalyst. The second is by starting at or increasing your generosity by 1% to allow us to continue to fuel the mission here at Catalyst. And then lastly, by inviting one person, one invitation. And that is simply to bring a friend or family member or coworker or neighbor with you at some point between now and the end of the year to join us at a weekend service. So all that can be found on a page that we've created, which is catalystwoodland.com/justone, and would love to have you get involved from no matter where you are listening to this podcast. All right, I know that was a lot of stuff. Thank you for sticking with us, and let's join into this week's sermon. All right, so today as we wrap up this Dark Horses series, I have just kind of a duel. It's a tag team Dark Horse for you. But how many of you this week saw the unveiling of the new Tesla truck? The ugliest thing on the planet. I was waiting, man. I was like, this is going to be so cool. And I should have gotten a picture of it. Maybe I will for second service. But so sorry, you can Google it while I'm preaching. Did you know that 45% of millennials fact check a pastor as he's speaking? Yeah, terrifying. Anyway, a new stat that just came out. So this truck comes out, and I'm expecting, Tesla, like, some of their stuff looks pretty sweet. And I was expecting it, and it comes out, and it just looks like this concrete blob. And then it has some cool features to it, but it's the weirdest thing. But then, all of a sudden, and I don't know if you're like me, when I first saw it, I was like, this thing's so dumb. And then as I'm like reading and seeing people like tweet about it and all this other stuff, I'm like, I all of a sudden want one. I don't know why, but I'm like, here, take my money. Like, I don't know why, but I think it's largely because I saw a bunch of other people want it. And then now, because I want to be like them, and I am kind of envious that like other people could just throw down some money to get this ridiculous looking truck, that I'm just waiting for the first one we see in Woodland, and it's just going to be the weirdest thing you've ever seen. But if you see, watch it. It's a pretty cool unveil, but there's this one part, it's really funny, where they have this metal ball
And he asks him to like, hey, test it on the window. And he like blows the window out and he's like, whoops. Anyway, it's pretty funny. But there's just this thing within each one of us, this envy and self-ambition. And the thing that is so interesting to me about envy is that it is really easy to see in other people, not so easy to see within ourselves. If I were to say to you, who in your life would you say is a little too envious, a little too self-ambitious, wants a little too much, a little more than they have? You could probably name me a couple people, but if I were to say, well, are you envious? You'd be like, no, I'm not envious. Because when it comes to us, we don't call it envy. We call it something else. We call it fairness, right? Or we call it justice. Well, that's not fair. Fairness is that I would get that. That's not fair. You know, it's not just that they got the promotion, that they got the relationship, that they got the new truck, that they got whatever, and I didn't get it. We call it something completely different when it comes to us. When we see someone else in the world with some kind of envy, our natural reaction to them is, man, just let it go. Your life is fine. You're cool. Don't worry about it. But then when it comes to us, and we're, if someone were to say to us, well, just let it go. I can't let it go. It's not fair. It's not right. I want what I want. I earned that. I deserve that. And there's this weird thing inside of each of us to just not be okay with the way things are and always want more. You know where you see this? There were two specific instances. I don't know if you've been a part of this, but I was just trying to think like, okay, how do we all see this? The first one you've probably been around is when a job promotion comes on the table. Suddenly people who were super good friends are now mortal enemies, right? Because something that wasn't even there a week ago, now all of a sudden you put something out there, hey, did you know there's a promotion available in the company, and now you're jockeying for position. People are throwing people under the bus. You're hearing stuff that you've never heard before. Gossip is all, it's crazy. And something that didn't even exist a couple days ago. Or this one, I don't know if you've ever had the joy of being a part of this, when all of a sudden a family inheritance comes on the table. Wasn't there a couple days ago. Now all of a sudden, people are jockeying for position, and it'll tear a family apart. I mean, I have been at, some of you may not know, I work for the police department as a chaplain, and it would blow your mind the amount of homes that I've stood in where grandma has not yet left the home. She's still like there in her bed. We're waiting for like the coroner, and the family is in the other room going to blows over the inheritance. We're 20 minutes in, and people are like, hey, I want the house. Well, you get the house, I get the car. And I'm like, what? And I'll walk into the other room and just be like, hey, stop it. Like, what? Stop. There's a time and a place for this conversation. That is not now. Knock it off. And then they're like, yes, Dad. I'm like, okay, fine. Then I walk out of the room. But it's weird, right? It's weird how there are these environments that envy just springs up within us. We're like, what is that? Where did that come from? It's so, so ugly. Such a nasty part of who we are. The temptation, though, is to look at people who are envious and go, what an idiot. Like, to look at those people who are fighting over the inheritance when grandma passed a couple minutes ago. And to look at them and go, what fools, rather than to look at us and say, okay, what is it inside of us? Because the truth is, every single one of us at some level has some form of envy or self-ambition. We're envious about something or someone or some situation. And so we're going to look at a very unique story today. It's going to actually focus on a couple individuals. Our dark horses, the people who don't get a lot of airplay in the Bible, are Aaron and Miriam. You may not even know those names, but Aaron and Miriam are the brother and sister of Moses. Now, you may know the name Moses, but Aaron and Miriam, they don't get a whole lot of play, and what they do is actually a little embarrassing. And so we're going to take a look at them, but I need to kind of back up and give you a little bit of background on Moses. But before we do all that, let us pray, and then we'll dive in. God, we thank you for these moments today where we can look into your word and see how we would live differently. God, I think for each one of us, I pray that you would expose the envy that's in our heart, the self-ambition to make ourselves bigger and better than we actually are, rather than just to settle into who you've created us to be and the position and role you've given us in life. So God, I pray that by your Spirit, you would just reveal to each one of us where this needs to land. God, we too, tonight pray for the 49ers and their defeat over the Green Bay Packers. Aaron Rodgers can't handle our defense. May he trip and hurt himself, not in a bad way, but just in a not available for tonight way. It's in your name we pray. Amen. Because their backup is terrible. All right. Ready to go to work? All right. Moses. All right. So at this point in the story, Moses, his leadership is, we'll call it a rough patch. He's having a rough patch in his leadership. They've been exiled out of Egypt for about a year, not quite, just a little under a year. And as you may be familiar, if you know the story, the Israelites are getting a little, we'll call it anxious. And so they're starting to complain and to moan and, oh, Moses, like, why did you do this to us? Why did you take us out here? Why can't we go back? And the whole idea of slavery, of actually going back to building bricks all day long and living in the heat, like, actually looks more enticing than what they're currently living. And then now at this point, God has been graciously providing for them manna from heaven. It shows up every morning. Manna, you could probably think of it as like Hawaiian bread. How many Hawaiian bread fans in the room? Woo, woo. Yeah, Hawaiian bread is delicious, but not every day. And at some point, I mean, you could have any favorite food. If you have it every day for a year, at some point, you're going to get sick of it. Well, all the Israelites have come to this point. They're like, Hawaiian bread is sweet. It's disgusting now because I've had it literally every day for a year. I'm over it. So now everyone's starting to complain. Everyone's starting to get all riled up. And then we see Moses running on fumes in Numbers chapter 11. If you don't know where Numbers is, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, fourth in chapter 11. We're going to be jumping around a little bit. So we're going to be in Numbers, a little bit of Exodus, a little kind of all over the place. All right, so just do your best to keep up. If you can't, it'll be up on the screen to either side, or you can flip on a device, whatever you want to do. Are we ready to go? Let's do it. Numbers 11, 11. Moses said to the Lord, "Why have you dealt ill with your servant? Why have I not found favor in your sight that you lay the burden of all these people on me?" Now, he's having a rough patch of leadership. I can say with great integrity that I've never prayed this about you, okay? I've never gone to the Lord and been like, "Lord, why? Why these people? They're driving me nuts." At least not in the last 6 months. In the last 6 months, you guys have been great. Did I conceive all these people? Are these all my kids? Did I give them birth that you should say to me, "Carry them in your bosom, as a nurse carries a nursing child, to the land that you swore to give their fathers"? Where am I to get meat to give all these people? For they weep before me and say, "Give us meat that we may eat." I'm not able to carry all these people alone. The burden is too heavy. If you will treat me like this, kill me at once. If I find favor in your sight, that I may not see my wretchedness. God, if you're going to let me keep leading these people, you might as well just kill me. These people are horrible. These people are terrible. All they do is complain and complain and complain. And I get Moses a little bit. I understand. And people are like, "Oh, put speakers in the lobby." And the first Sunday we put speakers in the lobby. They're so loud. Yeah, why do we have speakers in the lobby? It's like, "Lord, take me now. Just kill me. Kill me now." But Moses, I mean, you got to like understand where Moses is coming from. I mean, there's a lot of pressure on him. But it's in this moment, in his weakest moment of leadership, Aaron and Miriam, his brother and sister, his closest confidants, they turn on him. Now, Miriam, you may know the story, you may not. In Exodus, Moses, baby Moses is born, and Pharaoh's coming through. He's going to kill all the Israelite boys. And so Miriam takes baby Moses and puts him in a basket and floats him down the river. He goes down the river and he gets picked up by Pharaoh's daughter. And she's like, oh, man, what do I do with this baby? And Miriam steps out and is like, hey, real quick, I heard you found a baby, which is so crazy. I had no idea that was going to happen. I can find a nursing mother for you to take care of the baby. And she's like, oh, yeah, sure. So then Miriam takes Moses back to mom. And they end up growing up in Pharaoh's household and actually get rescued that way. Aaron comes on the scene when Moses is told to go back to Pharaoh and tell him that famous line, let my people go. And so he's ready to go. And then all of a sudden, he gets really nervous. And many scholars think that Moses had a bit of a speech impediment or some kind of stutter. And so he was very uncomfortable going in front of Moses and demanding, let my people go. And so he complains to God and is like, I can't do this. I can't go in front of Pharaoh. I'm going to look like a moron. He's like, well, then we'll send Aaron, your brother, because he's very well spoken. We'll just send him. And you can stand behind him and he'll kind of be your press secretary. And so Aaron goes and he speaks. And a little later on, once the temple gets established, Aaron gets installed as the high priest. And so these are two people that have a very high respect among the people. Like, they're good people. They've done good things. They have a lot of honor, a lot of prestige. But the problem is when they, even though they are honorable people, when they look at Moses, there's something that grows within them. And they go, yeah, I have a lot, but not what he has. I want what he has. I want the favor he has. I want to speak with God like I want what he has. And this envy begins to grow within them. And so Numbers jump down to chapter 12, verse 1. Miriam and Aaron, this is where they turn on him. Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Cushite woman whom he had married, for he had married a Cushite woman. A Cushite woman in that time was probably, think about North Africa. So there is the Israelite, Moses, who married an African-American woman, and they were not okay with that. So like, hey, are we all clear? Like, he married someone from a whole nother region. And so they said, has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Has he not, spoken through us? I mean, is he the only one? And the Lord heard it. Now, the man Moses was very meek, more than all people who are on the face of the earth. Okay, the Bible is fantastic sometimes because, this is really funny. Because it said, and now the man Moses was very meek. Other translations say that Moses was the most humble man ever, more than all the people who are on the face of the earth. Real quick summary. Do you know who wrote the book of Numbers? Moses did. So Moses takes the opportunity to go, now Moses was the most humble man ever. Of anyone in all the earth. Like, hey, a good on you, man. If you're going to write the book, you might as well take your shot. Like, I totally respect. Now, then all the earth, I totally lost my place. Where am I? Very meek and more the, I don't. And suddenly the Lord said to Moses and to Aaron and Miriam, come out, you three, to the tent of meeting. We need to have a powwow. I need to meet with the three of you. And the three of them came out, and the Lord came down in a pillar of cloud and stood at the entrance of the tent and called Aaron and Miriam. And they both came forward. And he said, hear my words, if there is a prophet among you. I, the Lord, make myself known to him in a vision. I speak with him in a dream, not so with my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my house. What he's saying is if there is someone who speaks with me, understand that the way I speak with them is in dreams and visions, but not with Moses. Moses isn't like everyone else. Moses gets a little extra. He goes on and explains. With him, I speak mouth to mouth, which is really weird and a terrible translation. It should be, the better translation is face to face. Speaking mouth to mouth with God just is weird. Face to face, okay? And not in riddles. And he beholds the form of the Lord. He's seen my form. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses, why would you just speak so ill of him? And the anger of the Lord was kindled against them, and he departed. When the cloud removed from over the tent, behold, Miriam was leprous like snow. And Aaron turned toward Miriam, and behold, she was leprous. And Aaron said to Moses, oh, my Lord, do not punish us Because we have done foolishly and have sinned. Notice he's putting himself in the punishment. He actually wasn't punished yet. But he's like, hey, we are so punished right now, even though his sister's staying there with leprosy. He's just trying to get out from his punishment. Such a dude. Let her not be as one dead whose flesh is half eaten away when he comes out of his mother's womb. And Moses cried to the Lord, oh God, heal her, please. But the Lord said to Moses, if her father had but spit in her face, she not be shamed for 7 days? Just so we are clear, that was actually a very ancient tradition that a father could spit in the face of their child when they were disrespectful, and then that child would have to go live in isolation for 7 days. So parents, you have biblical precedent. No, I'm kidding. That would be horrible. Like, and your kid's like, okay, like 7 days. Anyway, so he's asking, like, could this not happen? So Miriam was shut outside the camp for 7 days, and people did not set out on march till Miriam was brought in again. And after that, the people set out from Hazeroth and camped in the wilderness of Paran. So they rebelled, and they were punished for that rebellion. But the difficult thing to see is that actually, they both had their shot. Before we come to this moment, in Exodus chapter 32, they actually had both of them had an opportunity to make sure that this isn't what happened. Exodus 32, starting in verse 1. When the people saw that Moses delayed to come down from the mountain, so he goes up to go speak with God to go get the Ten Commandments. The people gathered themselves together to Aaron and said, up, make us gods who shall go before us. As for this Moses, the man who brought us out of the land of Egypt, we don't know what's become of him. We don't know where he went. So here's Aaron's opportunity. Moses has stepped aside. Aaron gets his shot. Aaron gets his opportunity to lead. And this is why he was so envious, because he blew it. So Aaron said to them, all right, well, take off your rings of gold that are in your ears of your wives, your sons, your daughters, and bring them to me. So the people took off the rings of gold that were in their ears and brought them to Aaron. And he received the gold from their hand and fashioned it with a graving tool. That'll become important in a minute. He fashioned it with a tool and made a golden calf. And they said, these are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt. And when Aaron saw this, he built an altar. And he made a proclamation and said, tomorrow will be a feast to the Lord. And they rose up early the next day and offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings. And the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play that they had this huge, crazy orgy fest party around this calf that Aaron had fashioned. Well, God finds out about this. Moses finds out about this. He comes down the hill, sees what's going on, gets so pissed that he smacks the Ten Commandments on his knee and snaps them in half. And he's just livid. And so Moses goes to Aaron and goes to confront him. And here's what happens. And Moses said to Aaron, what did this people do to you that you brought such great sin upon them? And Aaron said, let not the anger of my Lord burn hot. You know these people. You know they're terrible people. You said it yourself. These people suck real bad. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, you know how horrible it is to lead these people. I tried for a minute and it was not good. For they said to me, make us gods who shall go before us. As is Moses, we don't know where he went. He brought us out of Egypt and we don't know. And what am I supposed to do? And so I said to them, let any who have gold take it off. And so they gave it to me and I threw it into the fire and out came this calf. I don't know, man. I don't know. I took all this gold and I just threw it in and calf. I don't know, man. I don't know what to tell you. He had his shot. He had his opportunity. But the envy burned within him that he went way too far. He went way too far to the other side. And we do this. We spend so much energy on thinking of what could be. And it causes us to have restless nights. It drains our energy. It drains our creativity. It drains our rest and just our inner peace. It causes us, I don't know if you've ever had this happen, to have brain fights. Have you ever had this? Where you argue with someone in your head and you are always way more articulate you win every time. Like, there's just something about it. You'll say something, you're like, ooh, that's good. I need to remember that. But we do all these crazy things because we want something more. And if you were to put envy, the life of envy, into one single sentence, it would be this: life would be so much better if. You want to define envy in your life? Man, life would be so much better if. If what? What is it for you? What do you, when you put your head on the pillow at night, what is your answer to that question? Man, life would be so much better if I had a better job. Life would be so much better if I had a different spouse. Life would be so much better if I had like 10 grand. Like, just that's all. Life would be so much better if my kids weren't so crazy. Life would be so much better if, and you fill in the blank. But every single one of us, when we calm our spirit enough to listen, we have an answer to that question. Life would be so much better if. And whatever your answer to that question is the cause for your envy and self-ambition. To say, I want to do what I want to do. I want to put myself first. I want to go in the direction that I want to go in. Now, Moses and Aaron and Miriam, see, here's the thing. They weren't idiots. Like, they were pretty smart. They were wise and they were honorable people. They were good people. They just looked at Moses and thought, you know what? I can do better. And when you do that, when you finish this sentence, life would be so much better if, what you're doing, you may not say it this way to yourself, but what you're doing is you are putting yourself in the seat of God and saying, my life would be better if this happened. You're playing God is what you're doing. You're trying to move and manipulate your life as if you were God. You are playing God. And let me tell you something, you make a terrible God. You don't know what's best for you. God does. You and I don't. And so there are three traits that I would say are very rare in those of us who want to pursue a certain kind of passion for God more than we do of our own plan. I'll give you the three traits, and then we'll do a quick wrap up of some tips. So here we go. The first rare trait is submission. Now, in our culture, submission is seen as weakness. So if you were saying, man, I'm going to be submitted to someone else, well, then that is somehow seen as a ton of weakness. God is in charge of who is in charge. Let me say that again. God is in charge of who is in charge. You don't have to worry about that. But we have this weird thing in our culture of needing to be independent. It's largely a Western thing. We try to be so independent, and that means that we don't depend on anyone else. We don't submit ourselves to anyone else. We don't actually lay ourselves at someone else's feet. You know, one of the things that when I'm working in the business world and talking to people and talking to employers, and maybe you've seen this in your own company, one of the most difficult things is to find a young person who will actually take instruction. Like, it is almost impossible because they know it's about, no, I'm independent. I know what's going on. And it's like, no, you don't. No, you don't. No, you haven't been around. But yes, there are some, you have new creative ideas. And I'm all like, a couple weeks ago, I spoke about it. And I'm all about like listening to youth to understand what's coming up in the next generation because they're going to be leading eventually. And that's awesome. But there is an element of submission that needs to take place. I believe that every single young person should do one of two things, either do a short stint in the military or retail. Why? Because to understand in military, like there's a certain, like this is how this goes. And I give an order and you take the order. And if you don't, there's going to be some problems. Or retail. How many retail people? Yeah, there you go. All right. So my very first job, I worked at Long's Drugs. Horrible. And I think everyone should work in retail because one of the things that it does is it teaches you to treat absolute jerks with honor and respect. And they will look at you and say the most hurtful things to you, things that are way outside of your pay grade. But you just have to go, okay, yes, sir. Yes, ma'am, I'm so sorry about that. I will try to make that better. There's nothing you can do to make that better, but you just, right, you have to learn to submit yourself to say, man, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry that you feel that way. We've just lost that in our culture. It's not, I heard a pastor say this week. It was really good. It's not about being submissive. It's not about being less. It's about accepting your role and saying, this is my role. When I worked at Long's, like that was my role. I stood at that customer service counter, and anything that someone came up to me and said, well, this is the problem, you did this, how dare you, I just, yep, okay. Not because I was less than, but because that was the role that I was asked to do. And it's interesting that many of us, I argue all of us, can do that for a paycheck, but we can't do that for God. We can have a role and say, well, this is my role, and this is my job, and this is what I do. But then when it comes to God, no, this is what I want. I'm not going to do that. No, you don't understand. How can we do that for an employer but not for God? Makes no sense. Submission. The second one is contentment. Contentment, our culture says, is a lack of drive. If you are content, somehow you've given up in life. You've just thrown up your hands and been like, well, I guess this is best as it's ever going to be. Like that is not contentment. Just giving up is not contentment. And let me tell you something. Contentment is learned. It's not acquired. For Miriam and Aaron, it was never enough. Nothing was ever good enough, ever in their lives. And one of the things that they realized, that we eventually all realize, is there's always another mountain to climb, isn't there? You get somewhere, you arrive, and you go, there's another one. Okay, success, contentment, joy, peace, it's at the top of that one. And then we spend the next 2 or 3 years or the next job cycle or the next phase of parenting or whatever to crest that hill, all to what? See another one. That's life. It's never going to be enough. It's never, let me tell you something right now. You're never going to have enough money. You're just not. You're never going to be so happy that it's just never going to happen. And so what is contentment? How do we do that? Well, it's so simple, it just seems foolish that we focus on what we have, not what we don't. It's just focus. It's choosing to look around and say, wow, look at all I have. And not to love it, but that you can live with it. There's a difference. Because I think so often contentment, we tell people contentment is, you have to love it. You have to love your current circumstance. No, you don't. But you have to trust that, no, I can live with this. I can live within the means that God has provided for me. You don't have to be head over heels about it. You can still be a little frustrated, but you have to understand that this is how I'm going to live. Third is humility. Humility in our culture is seen as just being less than. That you demote, that you demoralize yourself, that you put yourself down. And it's not about that at all. What humility is a willingness to take second place. A willingness to not be the center of attention. A willingness to not be the best. A willingness to say, you know what? I'm going to put the company before me. I'm going to put my sister before me. I'm going to put I'm going to put my spouse before. Like that's humility, is to say, you know what? In this situation, I'm going to take a step back and I'm going to be second place. And let me tell you something, if you are submissive in the things that you do, not in a weird, just being subverted by control, but in just a God-honoring way, if you are content and you are humble, you are a very rare person in our culture. You are very rare, and most of the time you're seen as weak. But God would say, no, that's what I've been trying to build within you. And so here's how I want to kind of wrap this up. If you and I were at Starbucks, okay, and you were to say, hey, Matt, can we go grab a cup of coffee and just sit down, because there is someone in my life, there is something in my life that they have something that I want. And I don't know what to do with that. what would I tell you? Well, rather than having a couple hundred cups of coffee, I'll just do this, okay? And tell you all at the same time. This is what I would tell you. These are the five things that I would tell you. The first thing that I would tell you is life is not fair. I'm sorry, I wish it was, but life's not fair. Fairness and justice and what is right is usually not something that we get to see properly on this side of heaven. We always have a bit of a skewed view on that. We have our own internal story or whatever we grew up with, our past narrative, whatever it may be, that tells us this is right, this is wrong, this is fair, this is unfair, this is just, this is just wrong. I don't like this. But the more we live in this life, we realize that, yeah, life isn't fair. It is part of the fallen world that we live in. And rather than getting angry at God, that we should get angry at sin and go, I don't like that things aren't fair. Well, the reason things aren't fair is because you and I have our own desires, and we usually live by the seat of our own desires. And the more people that do that will tilt the scale into a life that is not fair. Life isn't fair. The second thing I would tell you is you can't lead if you can't follow. I have never seen an excellent leader who is not at first a good follower. I, for most of my life, I've wanted to be in charge of things. I will never forget when I was a little kid, I was out in the street and I was just bossing everyone in the street around. And everyone hated me for it. Like they couldn't stand being around me. And one day my mom went up to my dad and said, like, why don't you stop that? He's being a jerk and he's just bossing everyone around. And my dad said, no, he'll learn. It's called undeveloped leadership. Don't worry about it. But you learn at some point in your life that you can't do that to people. I have an opinion on everything. If you ask me any kind, I guarantee you, I don't even have to know anything about it. I have an opinion on it. Like, that is just how I live my life. But so many of the things that I've learned for me personally, that they were not natural to me, that someone had to teach me. I had a mentor. He taught me once, and this is a great line. He said, if you're not in charge, it's not a mistake. If you're not in charge, it's not a mistake. And so if there's something in your life, you're like, well, I should be in charge. It's not a mistake that you're not. There is, in many ways, God could actually be protecting you and preventing you from causing harm to yourself or others because your leadership is just off the charts. God didn't allow me actually to be in charge of anything really of any significance until I actually had that something change inside of me. And I remember it distinctly. It happened. I had been a worship pastor at the church I was at for about a year. And when people would come in, when the band would come in, I would just be standing there on stage with this frowned look on my face. Like, why are you late? Why aren't you? I'm so mad at you. And so my pastor, he would kind of watch this. And after a while, he came up to me and he said, hey, here's the deal. I want you to serve these people. I want you to follow their lead. I said, oh, what? So suck? And he was like, no, there's your problem right there. He said, I want you to hug every one of them when they come in. I said, hug them. I'm not their dad. I'm not their brother. Why would I hug them? That's the most ridiculous thing. I'm their boss. I don't hug people. And he goes, okay, well, it's now a job requirement. I said, what? You can't do that. He goes, try me. Fine. So I hugged everyone. How would you like to have been a part of those first few ones? Just like, hey, whatever. I don't know. He's making me do it. This is stupid. He made me do it for 3 months. Hug everyone. I don't know if you've seen or encountered me in the lobby lately. I hug everybody. Because it has to be worked in you. None of these things are natural. You have to actually work at it. Third is this. Nothing is ever as good or easy as it looks. Ever. You've probably heard the adage before, if the grass looks greener on the other side, then water your own grass. that there is an element to life that Miriam and Aaron, they saw what Moses had and they were like, oh, I want that. Oh, I could do that better. But then once given the opportunity, they blew it. Nothing is ever as easy or as good as it looks. It's just a fact of life. I heard someone say this week, and I thought it was really good. They said, we often want what someone has, but we're not willing to do what they did. So we look at someone's marriage and go, man, I want a marriage like that. Well, then do what they did. Stick with it. Work at it. Do the tough thing. Well, I want to be a boss like that person. Well, then do what they did. Read the books that they read. Like, there's something that you have to work for. And in my personal life and leadership, man, every season growing up under these pastors, I was like, man, these lead pastors, what do they do all day? They just like sit around and like have coffee with people. This is ridiculous. If I was in their shoes, I would do a much better job. Well, I remember the very first time that I led a meeting. It was this ridiculous team meeting at our home before Catalyst even started. And I will never forget being upstairs terrified because I didn't know what to do. I was like, everyone's looking at me. I have to have an answer. I just felt the Spirit of God say, this is what you wanted. Have a little more respect for the people who trained you up, because it's never as easy as it looks. Number four, a fool argues with God. I would tell you that. You want to be a fool? Go ahead and argue with God. Tell him what he's given you is not enough. Tell him who he's given you is not good enough. Tell him that you don't get paid enough, that you don't get recognized enough, that you don't have enough authority, that you don't have the right kids. Just go ahead and complain to God that what he's given you isn't good enough. And by the standards of the Bible, you would be a fool to look at God and say, you blew it. You blew it in my life. Don't argue with God. And the last thing I would say to you is this. The only difference between contentment and envy is your focus. It's the only difference. In what you focus on, do you focus on gratitude or comparison? Because the thing that will kill you is comparison. They have this, I want it. They have that, I want it. They're driving that sweet Tesla truck, I want it. Comparison will kill you. Gratitude looks and says, this is what I have. This is what God has given me. I'm going to use it to the best of my ability. And that's, again, that's one of the reasons why we've done this whole Just One initiative, is for us to stop each day for 1 minute and just say, God, what do you want me to do? And many times, especially as we go into this week of Thanksgiving, just be thankful. Just spend a minute going, God, thank you. Thank you for what you've given me. Because how many times, and I don't know if you're like me, it's so easy for that 1 minute, the alarm goes off, and for me to turn it into me asking God for a minute of all the things I want. Rather than remembering the whole point is just to sit and say, okay, God, what do you have for me? Because he's already given you everything that he believes you need for this point, at this moment, in this role in life. Be thankful for it. As we wrap, let's pray and then we'll sing some songs to the team. Heavenly Father, God, we thank you for all that you've given us. The truth is, God, you didn't have to. We didn't have to be born at this time and this day to live the lives that we live, but we do. And you've allowed us to live in this great country where we have the freedoms and opportunity that we have. Thank you. That we have, for many of us, all that we need, and then some. Thank you. God, for those times where we look in very plain ways, look at you and say, not good enough. I want more. I want this job. I want that relationship. I want this. I want that. I want to look like that. I want to act like that. I want to lead like that. God, we're sorry for taking what you've graciously given us and just turning back and saying, it's not good enough. I want more. God, thank you for all that you've done for us. Would you just shape that envious heart within us to be a heart that is filled with gratitude and thanks for all that you've done. It's in your name we pray. Amen.